Thank you so much. And welcome, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here again. I think I can't really remember the year that I was with you guys. There was, I think, a different name. But Martin Elwood is a good friend of mine. And I'm in awe at what has happened all through the years with this beautiful, beautiful invitation of sharing the Dharma in that way. So I would like to start with meditation. I hear that that is the format and it's as usual. And I will ask you later, where are you guys from and all of that? I'm so curious, but let us just plunge in. Into the meditation. So maybe first thing to do is to make sure your surrounding is really supportive of that. Maybe you need to, I don't know, turn some lights on, off the phone, something like that. You probably know that and you've been through that already. And please make yourself comfortable. As comfortable as you can. If you're sitting like me in a chair, so let your body relax in the chair. And take the time to make sure that the body really is stable and comfortable. Please feel free to let your eyes closed very gently. Take a deep breath or two, like beautiful ceremony that points out to the body, mind, heart that we are starting something of importance, that this is a habit that we know, and it contributes to our well-being, to our freedom, to our beautiful qualities for us and for others. So begin with a few moments of reflection in that way. Sitting comfortably on a chair or a cushion, just relaxing. And I'll give a few reminders during the meditation. Feel free to either adopt them or ignore them as you wish. May there be a support for your practice right now. With the eyes closed, we notice the body, the way it sits, the different sensation from the top of the head, all the way down to the feet. Let your breathing be like a cool summer breeze, coming in and out by itself. No need to do any effort, but just this little intention to be present, stay present with the breath, with the body, with the heart, with the mind. I'm just noticing some softness that can come if we let it, softening the face, softening shoulders, belly, hands, Letting the sounds be just the sound. Is there really an interruption? And allowing the meditation to be as vast as the sky, so things can come in, stay for a while and disappear. Like fireflies or clouds. And let the moment be full for you, without you trying to push it away, fight it, battle it in any way. Just allowing whatever arises to be there where you, when you hold in your heart the quality of kindness. And again, allowing, opening and allowing whatever experience that arises in the heart, in the mind, in the body. Knowing it, meeting it, making room for it to be, and for us to meet it as it is, as we are right now. And with the quality of mindfulness, also knowing the shared experience of being human right now, whoever we are, wherever we are now connected in our simple, plain humanness. The same breath that is moving through our bodies. The same way in which we know how to pay attention. The way in which we can be kind, inwardly and outwardly, right now, not as an idea, but right here, right now, practicing kindness towards ourselves. Being gentle, and clear. some more moments of resting into our experience, whatever it is right now. Meeting it, knowing it, or what it is. Breath, body, heart, mind. Welcome. No need to fix anything or push away anything, but rather learn the skill of opening up, meeting in truth, whatever it is. However we are, just like that. Stability of the body, stability of the mind. And bringing warmth and kindness to meet the experience, whatever it is, we are here to meet it. Thank you, friends. Thank you for your presence and for your practice. If you wish, you can make some movements like that. Keep your hands warm and just say hello to the face. Yes, exactly. Beautiful. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm really, really happy to be here and also to see so many friends already that I know, which is lovely. And, it's great that now you can hear me also in English, even though I'll try my best teaching in English if anybody doesn't understand anything, please let me know something. Please let me know. And I'm curious, maybe before I plunge into the talk, maybe people can write down where you guys from, like some of you at least, not all the 100 people, but some of you at least a little bit. Maybe just the name and where you're from so I can look at the chat. Las Vegas, wow, London, wow, Miami. UK, beautiful, thank you, keep on, and it's also for the others that you can see, wow, this is such a miracle. I know I teach so much on Zoom and I'm still in awe from this platform. So thank you, and have a look at the chat. We have so many names of people and places, and wow, really warms my heart and reminds me of our common humanity, which is one of the key elements, if you will, for compassion, for self-compassion, the understanding that it's not just about me. There's so many others in my situation, in my position, that are experiencing right now whatever that I'm experiencing, just because we are sharing humanity. I wanted to share some thoughts about the topic of the noble search in the footsteps of the Buddha. And this is especially one of the topics that I love to explore, because we can look, we can view the Buddha as a real person, which he probably was, according to historians and so forth. And we can also look at his life as myth, and whatever different, I would say, stations that he went through, there is a relevance to our own lives. And I always remember one of my good friends and teacher, Christopher Titmus, who was talking about his teacher, Ajahn Buddhadasa, who used to start each talk by saying the same phrase, brothers and sisters to birth, aging, sickness, death. Maybe it doesn't sound, I don't know, too alluring, but still, I mean, it pinpoints to something very deep. What connects us is much bigger than what we think that might separate us. And when we look at the life of the Buddha, we can, and I certainly do, and that's why I want to share it with you, can draw inspiration from really seeing his life as, if you will, a journey of a hero. This is also a name of a book written some, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago by Joseph Campbell, who was exploring different myths and archetypes. Apparently, there is quite similar, I would say, route for many of us in our lives. We might start off, as the Buddha did, in quite well-off family or surrounding. Maybe nothing was missing, or it seems like nothing on a material level was missing. But certainly something was missing. And what was it? What was this whisper that the young Siddhartha Gautama heard and did not let it go, actually heard and followed? I will just remind you, I'm sure most of you know the story of Siddhartha Gautama and how he became the Buddha, the one, the enlightened one, the one who woke up. But the different stations in his life bear resemblance to, and that's actually something to ponder about, might bear resemblance to different periods in our lives, and we can lean into the life of the Buddha to see what can we understand about our own lives, about the different places that we are at right now. And I'll try to be more specific and see and give you some examples. The first that might be really long station would be the place that we feel, okay, it's okay. And like the Buddha, he lives in this palace that was maybe full of gold and beauty and so forth. But the inner feeling was a feeling of lack. Something was missing. And after a long time, really long time, he was, according to the stories, 29, when he left everything behind and he found himself in sort of a liminal, I would say, a situation or time of life, that the old thing is finished, is not anymore for him or for us maybe. The new thing, not yet arisen. And we might find ourselves in a place that is neither here nor there. We know the old ways and we didn't want them anymore for many various reasons. We don't know the new ways, but we did hear the whisper. A story that I love to tell is about how a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. This is quite amazing, and it happens every day, many, many, many times a day around us. And since it's a movement of nature, and we are a movement of nature as well, an expression of nature, there's no really much difference between us and the way in which a caterpillar is changing and shifting and shape-shifting into what we call then a butterfly. So the different stations in our lives might represent just the same thing. A caterpillar starts off as a very small creature that crawls, has many, many legs maybe, and a certain height, and eats certain things. And all of a sudden, and by the way, scientists don't know why it happens, but it does happen, it stops and start weaving something around itself, and it becomes a cocoon, right? Or that's how you say it in English, like this kind of word, right? Cocoon. I hope I get it right. And after some time, apparently something very, very strange and wonderful and amazing is happening. This creature that before was a caterpillar and now just stands still has the ability to use some enzymes. You know this word? To use some enzyme, like some chemical that his body produces, and he melts himself down. This creature disappears into this liquidy black and green goo, I would say, for some time. If we would open this creature, I don't even know how to relate to it. Is it an animal or not? not yet another animal. If we will open it right then and there, we'll find this liquid instead. And after some time, from this very liquid, something else is happening, and a completely different creature, a butterfly, is forming. And maybe we know this story, and it's quite amazing because the same creature is going through different, very, very different stations, I would say, in its small little lives, and still. And when we let go of the butterfly and the caterpillar and the green goo, whatever it is, and we look at our own lives, how would we know? How would we know what station we are at? How would we know? Can we really tell that we are in the first period, like the Buddha was when he was a prince and everything was seemed to be okay, but still he wasn't really happy and something really pushed him and moved him to a very different kind of life? How can we tell? What kind of phase are we right now? Are we the caterpillar? Are we this cocoon? Are we the butterfly already, or just becoming a butterfly? Do we really know? Can we really tell? Probably not. Probably not. Our judgment would say many various things about where we at. But the truth is that only from a distance of a time, we can say, oh, in this period, yes, it was a difficult one, but this kind of crisis made me who I am right now. The crisis that Siddhartha Gautama had when he left everything, left the palace and became a vagabond, a wandering monk. A crisis that he had when he met his five friends and decided actually to take food. And then he listened to his own integrity and they decided to not to speak to him ever again. Yeah, not that that happened. Something completely different happened. But crisis after crisis, if we have the eyes to see his journey in that way, we can say, oh my gosh, he's been through so much and it's so painful. But when the Buddha was talking about his own life journey, he called it the noble search. Why? He could have told many, you know, sad stories about what happened to him. Journey after journey, station after station. Still, he chose to name it differently. For the caterpillar, is the butterfly a catastrophe? There is a beautiful cartoon that a friend sent to me. And you see a caterpillar and a butterfly sit together around a table, and the caterpillar look at the butterfly and say to him, to it, you've changed. And the butterfly answers back, we are supposed to. Right. Well, when it comes to caterpillars and butterflies, we say, yes, of course, but that's what they do. But what about us? Just the same. But still, as human beings, we resist change. We resist becoming what we are supposed to. The Tibetan love to talk about Buddha nature, the innate goodness that each and every one of us has inside, or embody that. And still, what is it that we are aiming for? What are the can we tell in hindsight that was it a crisis, or maybe an amazing movement towards growth, towards being, I would say, fulfilling who we are supposed to be in this life. So again, for the caterpillar, becoming a butterfly is a huge crisis. Maybe. But when we talk about crisis, and usually we try not to be around this kind of life situation, I want to suggest another view on that. Many, many years ago, you remember Churchill was the prime minister in England, and after World War II, one of the stock phrases he said was, he talked about crisis. Never let a good crisis go to waste. Yeah, something like that. So what did he mean by that? We can have a different look at our own pains and suffering of our lives in the view of growing out of it and changing our form and our inner form into something that can be so, so beautiful. And coming out of our comfort zone, meeting the unknown, staying true to different values that we might hold. Like I can see by the story of the Buddha how important for him was in the value of integrity. How important was it for him each time that he learned with the best teachers of his time? And each time they told him, wow, you actually know everything that we know right now. And they invited him to come and teach with them. And he looked inside and said, no, I'm not where I want to be. I don't want to be the best meditator. I'm paraphrasing him. I want to be free. I don't want to be the best teacher, whatever. I want to be free. I don't want to be somebody if that moves me away from freedom. So often in our lives, we tend to adopt behaviors and views and ways of looking that are not really in alignment to our birthright, which is to be as free as we can be. And dare I say, as happy as we can be. And how do we define happiness? When we go back to Aristo, I think it's called Aristotle, right, in English? The way he defined happiness was a combination of joy, of pleasure and meaning. Pleasure and meaning. And we can invite that look into our own lives right now. And maybe ask that questions. Also, do we have that combination right now? What about our well-being right now? What obscures our well-being at this very moment? What are we practicing right now that doesn't let us see the meaning and the joy or the pleasure in each moment of our lives? So these kind of questions, inquiry questions, are actually inviting us to plunge into them and via asking those questions, it changes us. It works on us just like that enzyme that is working on the caterpillar. And reforming it into the butterfly that it can be. Do we really know at any given moment where are we in this process? I don't think so. But oftentimes we would tell ourselves that we are in a bad shape, in a painful situation that we rather not be in. And only after, you know, in a perspective, can we really understand what was going on in this crisis. In Hebrew, the word crisis actually comes from very ancient terminology that points out to the a chair, a certain chair that appears in the Bible, a chair that a woman who gives birth sits on. So a crisis is that kind of a chair that allows new life to come. Something had to be, to go. Something had to be finished. And a new thing had to emerge. So I'm opening up this topic for reflection and for really looking at our own lives, maybe not the whole scope of the life, but right now where you are with a different view, because the thing that really changes, the thing that really changes in us, and the thing that really changes us is the view. The view, the right view, the view that is the first the first path in the Eightfold Path. Yeah, the first one, the right view, changing point of view. This is all about that. And instead of looking at us or viewing ourselves in the light of a catastrophe, and this shouldn't have happened, and this shouldn't be happening, and all of that, maybe we can adopt a different view, having the word that comes to my mind is respect, because it comes from the Latin respecare, look again, look afresh, look anew. And this kind of view allows us to fulfill, or let's say open up more room for us to fulfill who we can really be, who can we really become. And when we look at the life of the Buddha and the different stations he went through, maybe us too, maybe we also can call our lives the noble search, and the different station we went through, we can name them by that name, the noble search, the noble quest. Can we see nobility in ourselves as well, in our life story? Are we willing to do that? This can change many, many things in the way in which we experience life. And maybe it can add to the combination of meaning and joy, meaning and pleasure for our well-being and for the well-beings of our loved ones and the people that we know and the people that we don't know. Because when we are changing, when we have the courage to have a new and fresh look at ourselves, at our life story, everything around us starts to change as well. So So I want us to hold this view very gently and allow it to percolate in the system and see the crises that we are going through as an opportunity for no different than alchemy. Something really beautiful can come out of what seems to be really messy and painful. And maybe in the midst of the fire is not the right timing to say that to ourselves or to others. So maybe not right in the midst of it, but keep that view in mind. And maybe it can surprise you. And it can come to your help when you completely forgot about it, but hey, all of a sudden something changes in the way in which you see yourselves and your life and the world. And when we dare to stay with life in its all its difficult forms, with an open, patient, and steady intention of being with, beauty can reveal itself, courage can reveal itself, meaning can reveal itself. And we are no longer victims. And we become more and more free to be who we can really be in this life. So there's so much more to say about it, and I apologize for my English. Maybe some things were not very clear. But I would love to hear you guys, and I'll give the chance to hear your questions and your remarks and your comments, but I want to thank you for your patience and for your practice, and I want to give big thanks for your Dana as well, Dana of practice and Dana of support for the teachers and for the beautiful organization that allow all this magic to happen. Please look at the chat and see how many people from so many countries are here. And I personally love to be engaged in questions and answers, and it doesn't have to be just me talking to you in that way. So whoever feels the call, whoever hears, yeah. The wish to just, you know, you can share where it touched you or if you have any questions. So Paula is asking, how can we give Dana? Ah, George, it's your turn. I have no idea. Probably. George, do you want to answer that or maybe later? I don't
know. I'm posting the Dana link in the chat, as I do at the end of the session usually, but here you go. This is the way to, it's in the chat box.
Super.
Sangha.live/donate. Thank you.
Super. Thank you. Thank you. So let's hear you guys. Where did it touch your heart? Where are you in your process? Any thought, any new thought that came to you, your heart, mind? Anything you wish to share? I would love to hear you. And you can just, I think you can take yourself off silent or just raise the hand or write something in the chat. Or...
Yeah, you have on the bottom of the screen, there's a one emoji says reactions. If you click on that, there's a virtual hand, and you can click the hand so we can see you come on screen with the raised hand, and then you can unmute and talk.
Okay, from Susan. Wait, it will take me a little while to read it. Very helpful approach in difficult times. Absolutely. I share only what I've been through. Otherwise, I would not teach it because it's been so helpful. So I'm so delighted to share it. Yeah. You can feel. Oh, good to know that you can feel the metamorphosis happening. Beautiful. Question. Do you have suggestion for creating the right view to see things afresh? Well, first of all, we need to know, thank you for the question, Alma. First of all, we need to know that the view that we have right now is not the truth. It's just a view. And this is one of the Buddha's one-liners. He said, how do you protect the truth? You say, this is a view. How do you protect the truth? You say, this is a view. Whatever we firmly believe about ourselves, usually it's not the nice stuff. Or oftentimes, let's say, it's like, it's easier for most people somehow to believe or to adopt views that are not very kind, I would say. There's something about the brain that is, that's really good to know apropos view. It's made for survival. Our brains are made for survival, not for well-being. This is really incredible to know it because we stop anticipating from our brain/minds to be kind to us and help us with our well-being. Yeah. You understand what I say? It's like incredible. Okay, it just tries, the brain just wants me to survive. It doesn't care so much about my happiness. It's very weird, but that's the way, you know, brain researchers has found out. So when we know that, we can adopt another view saying, okay, I know that. And now what can I do to achieve well-being or what the Buddha called liberation, fully and utter liberation of heart and mind? What kind of view can I adopt? First of all, knowing what is what, knowing what the brain is doing, knowing what the brain cannot do. That would be a good start. I hope I answered that. I see, Laurel, did you raise your hand? Yes, please. I'd love to hear you. You can,
Shalom.
Shalom.
wonderful talk. I didn't know that about the caterpillar.
That's, isn't it amazing?
That is amazing. I didn't realize it went through a stage of liquidity. That is absolutely, that's incomprehensibly amazing.
I know, and it's also all around us.
I also wanted to say that as a entitled white male American, first of all, your English is totally comprehensible. It's also very touching to have you go slow and reach for the proper word, and you found it every time. And
thank you.
It also, I just to the community and to George and everybody, it's weird as a privileged American to have everybody always accommodate us English people. And it's just another type of privilege that I have to deal with because it's uncomfortable to only speak English and have people always accommodate us in English. So I just want to thank you very much and say it was a very beautiful talk. It was articulate, understandable, and thank you for accommodating my lack of ability to understand Hebrew and or everyone else to understand all your languages. You are all so kind to accommodate us English speaking people.
Oh, that is so sweet. Thank you so much for saying that. Wow. Thank you. Appreciate it. Yes, please, Dawn. What a beautiful name you have.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, your talk was absolutely amazing and your English is fabulous. Mm-hmm. I just wanted, as you told that story with the caterpillar to the butterfly, I couldn't help but think of my own story. I was in a near fatal motor vehicle accident exactly 30 years ago tomorrow, and I almost died, or I may have died for a moment and had a little bit of an out-of-body experience, and my entire face needed to be reconstructed, and I had multiple other injuries. But it's the point of view, and I have always looked at that from a very different point of view, as a blessing that I had another shot at life, and I've taken it just as that, a blessing. I took all the recovery and all the surgeries and all the, you know, I closed head injury and learning to speak again, all that stuff as a blessing, because I was still here. And, you know, that was just amazing. And I've gotten to do a lot of the things the doctors told me, oh, you're never going to be able to do that again. You'll never do this again. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever you say. And I find that, I don't know, as a butterfly, I feel like, and I know I'm a butterfly at this stage. And as a butterfly, I'm like, wow, I've got to live, you know, an extra 30 years. I'm not, you know, I know butterflies aren't supposed to live very long, but I'm wondering if there's something past that butterfly stage. So I am just such a grateful butterfly, and happy to be here and to listen to what you had to say today. Thank you.
Oh, it's so beautiful. And you know what, Dawn? You are a different kind of butterfly. You are that kind of butterfly, which is beautiful, really. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, there's so much more to say about our crises and the way in which we conceive of them. But even if it doesn't have to be something super intense or dramatic, but just, you know, what most people, or I would say many, many people experience, anxiety, depression, you know, feeling not adequate, thinking that we do not belong, all this really painful stuff inside. Can we look at these inner movements as, actually, I would use Rilke's poetic language, the dragons in our lives? Can we look at them as princesses in disguise? And I would say even more, as messengers, really messengers, because they point out to what is important to us so many times. And we do not really have the ear or the eye or the heart to respect them in that way. Maybe we can look at them in a different way. So Dawn was just sharing something so beautiful and incredible. Yeah. Wow, I just imagine.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Everything you just said, I have gone through as a result of, you know, I mean, I look different. I haven't been able to work the same job. You know, my brain doesn't work the same. And I've gone through each and every one of those things that you've said, but it's true. You know, I just like everything, maybe at the time wasn't the best thing, but you know, on the other side, I can say, wow, okay. I was alive and I made it through that. And look where I'm at now. Wow. That's amazing. And I always share with other people that are like in the midst that there is hope and there's another side and better days are ahead. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. It's so meaningful for me to hear it, and I'm sure for many, many others. And wow, thank you for your kindness, you guys. You keep writing me things I don't know if I didn't miss some of your about Ramdas. Wow, thank you for all your messages. Beautiful. I would anybody else would like to comment or say something? Share something? Yes, please, Pierre.
Oh, thank you. Well, first, this is an awe-inspiring experience to have a seat in my home and experience this globally with all of you. It's as though I got such a valuable ticket to an amazing concert.
Yes. The butterfly concert.
Yeah. And I know it's not in person, but virtually. What a gift. But to comment on your share. So last night, I was filling out the beginnings of an application for a Buddhist chaplaincy program. Mm. In Redwood City, out of Redwood City, California. And the reason I bring this up is the act of answering these questions, right? The inquiry, the act of journaling.
Yeah.
I use voice notes on the iPhone and then I print them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 5 pages of single space. Right. And then we can go through it and review it and find the insights. And there was an evolution. There was a different direction where I have more questions as a result of the inquiry. So such value, right, in sitting and having stillness. Thich Nhat Hanh, I remember, taught that in a YouTube. On a whiteboard about why we do this for insight. And anyway, that's so I'm really grateful that you reminded me of this by the Eightfold Path, right view.
Yes.
Thank you guys very much.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Pierre. Victoria, do you raise your hand? Yes, please.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for this really beautiful talk. So poetic and so rich. Really, I'm in the arts, and it's not often that a Dharma talk it feels like it just sort of being enveloped in poetry and beauty. So it was really so beautiful. It's a privilege to have you as a teacher. Something came up for me in your talk that is a sort of sharp pain thinking about how much divisiveness and controversy and anger and rage and all kinds of, you know, unskillful afflictions in our society that have to do with this life and death question. And so many different opinions. And it's hard to navigate. Ranging from, you know, issues like abortion to euthanasia to what is a just war, when is it right to you know, is the idea of defense, or, you know, defending what, like in the Ukraine, I know people in the Ukraine who are really troubled because they want to defend their country, but at the same time, they don't want to engage in, I mean, it's, you know, the whole nonviolence issue. I mean, it's so immense. And
yes,
I don't know what my question is exactly, except that in that story of the sequences of the stages of the butterfly, there is that sense, like somebody already shared, you know, how is that possible that there's a liquid stage, which isn't really identifiable as anything. It's neither a caterpillar nor a butterfly. And I was thinking that's so true, not only as a spiritual metaphor, but as a literal physical metaphor for us as another, you know, type of being. And I don't know. I feel like it's, how can we try to breed a culture of mutual respect and the respect for all life and the sort of celebration of how, you know, I mean, I love in the metta practice, it's, you know, all beings, and some teachers go into great detail about the microbes and the, they really go right, they dig right down into the, you know, microscopic beings. And I love that. But at the same time, sometimes I think to myself, well, it's not like that. Like as Woody Allen, the filmmaker, remarked, the world is a big restaurant. You know, it's one species eats the next, you know, and it's, and that's the way
it's true.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't know what I'm asking, but it's just, I feel like it's so fraught, and what you said was somehow so beautiful and so enlightened. And I thought, how can we, you know, we who are in this practice and on this search, on this journey, how can we somehow embody that and navigate in a skillful way so that we don't contribute to the controversies?
Right. Oh, that's such a beautiful question. Thank you. Thank you for it. You put it so bingo. How can we contribute to nonviolence? How can we? Yeah, it's like the $1 million, actually. When we do understand what happiness is, when we do have meaning and joy and pleasure, yeah, in our lives, we are already, I call it a political action. Meditation and Dharma, for me, is nothing but political action, because when we are happy, we cannot harm anybody else. We just can't. It just, it's like light and darkness. It just doesn't go together. And then we are on the quest for happiness, for well-being. And it is such an important quest. Look, the Buddha, look at him. I mean, wow. What he went through just to be happy. But look, he changed everything by his quest. And our quest is not different. But often we just simply don't know what makes us happy and what not. And the culture, etc. I mean, everything just sells us the wrong stuff. And we are sent into this world, oftentimes, I say, with instructions that are not made for humans. Yeah, they're made for something else. I don't know, for a Monopoly game. You know, it's just doesn't make sense. But oftentimes, and that's the way we are wired as human beings, it takes a good crisis, like Churchill said, and we start to see and we start to understand, because it's really, really difficult when our hearts get shattered because of loss, because of illness, because of you know the reasons. It's really nearly impossible for the heart not to open up for another human being that is suffering. And I think this is another way in which we can view our path. It's, on the one hand, we can adopt Aristotle's concept of happiness, about the meaning and about the joy of life, and let's combine them together and let's let's go there. It's good. Let's go to there. And on the other hand, yeah, when the heart is raw and the pain is there, it opens, life opens us up like they do to the caterpillar. And they fill our hearts with compassion and with humility. And it's so, so beautiful. These qualities of a human being, that's what makes us so beautiful. And it goes together. And then I would say the question of what they call in Sanskrit, ahimsa, non-violence, it's just not possible for us to be violent. Like one of the ways, one of the titles the Buddha had, it's not a very known one, but in Sanskrit or Pali, it's called the sila va. You know the word sila, right? Mm-hmm. We have sila, samadhi, panya, right? You know sila. Sila is the morality or the virtue or the different ways in which we act inwardly and outwardly in the world. But he was sila va, meaning the one who embodied sila. It's not that he needed to practice it. It's like object and subject and the difference between them. He embodied it already. And when we make steps towards our well-being, we make steps at this very same time towards the well-being of others. It just has to go together. It cannot go separately. It just doesn't, in physics, it doesn't go together. You understand me? Or?
Yeah. It's very beautiful what you're saying. And I totally agree, of course. Well, not of course, but I mean, yeah, it's, I just wanted to add, in the Christian tradition, there's the idea of what's called the Alter Christi, the other Christ. And So it's the idea that every person you see is another Christ. So you have this relationship with everyone that you see where you can't feel anything except love and compassion. And so it takes away it sort of removes all those barriers of prejudice and judgment and also aversion, you know, because sometimes it's hard to look, you know, at people. Sometimes like the homeless people or whatever, if they look like they're struggling and they're very dirty and, you know, it's sometimes it's hard to see through all of those to see.
They don't look like Jesus.
Yes. So anyway, the same thing that you said, very beautiful to embody that somehow. It's very beautiful. Thank you.
That's great, Victoria. Can you repeat this term, alter?
Oh, yeah, I can write it in the chat. It's just the Latin. I'll just put it in the.
Can you say it again?
Alter Christi.
Alter Christi. Wow.
So alter like other. Yeah.
And it reminds me of this Tibetan practice that sends people off to view others as Buddhas. Mm-hmm. It has different kind of practices. Like maybe we are the only one left that are not Buddhas and all the rest are Buddhas. And how does it make us feel? Or see or view the others, or all of us included, all of us are actually okay with kindness and love and compassion. And it's very interesting that the mind / the brain can do it. It's very easy, actually. The only thing we need to do is to set our mind for it and try. It's like a little game we can play. And anyway, the mind is under so much bad influences, so many hours of the day because of whatnot. So when we know that we can actually incline the mind, that's another phrase of the Buddha, incline the mind towards liberation, incline the mind towards goodness, we have the ability to do this shift, to incline the mind. And you know what? It's not so difficult. It's quite amazing to discover. It's not that hard. We just need to do it. Wow. Thank you. Lovely.
Very beautiful. Well, thank you. Mm.
Wow. Anybody else wants to share something? Because I have, we have last few minutes and it's a beautiful poem I wanted to read to you guys. Oh, Mike, yes, please. I'll read it anyway after Mike speaks.
Hi, thank you very much for your talk. It was wonderful. And it really, I think the resonating part for me was talk about the metamorphosis and being in there. And I too didn't know about a liquid stage. It's incredible. For me, it's been a very reflective week. I've just retired from the military after 27 years.
Wow.
And I know when I first started sort of along the path, I very much felt like I was a fraud or somehow I wouldn't fit in or wouldn't be respected or was a spy, or how did this alpha male military guy fit in with these crazy hippies and stuff like that. And yes, I felt really, really, it just took me a long time to sort of, you know, accept myself and you know, a bit of self-compassion. But
I want to pause here because it's so incredible. Thank you so much for sharing it. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Please go on.
Thank you. No, this week is sort of, I had like all my final sort of, you know, pretty certificates to say thank you very much for serving your country and all these things. And I spent time in Sierra Leone, Afghanistan, Iraq, and you know, all the places that come up and we speak about in Sangha. And
wow,
it felt like a real end to me of that. And completely to one side, I came across something written by Thich Nhat Hanh, which I'd never seen before. And he'd written something about veterans, and I was just hoping you'd be willing to let me share that.
Of course, please do.
And I will read it out if I may, because it touched me. So he wrote, "Veterans are the light at the tip of the candle, illuminating the way for the whole nation. If veterans can achieve awareness, transformation, understanding, and peace, they can share with the rest of society the realities of war. And they can teach us how to make peace with ourselves and each other, so we never have to use violence to resolve conflicts again." And I just thought that was very beautiful and very powerful, and that certainly touched me. So I'd kind of like to acknowledge, I suppose, for me personally, that I am somewhere on that path, and also with today's chat, you know, in that very much transformational stage. So yeah, it's been quite a week. But thank you. And thank you for letting me share.
Mike, this is so, so beautiful. Oh, I breathe it in. Thank you for sharing that. I would actually love for you, if you can, put it on the chat. So
that would be
if you can. It's so beautiful and so touching.
Thank you.
And Mike, if I can just barge in. I don't know if you are a regular with Sangha Live, but if you're not, you can just open up the Sangha Live Connect webpage and please make a post with that.
Okay.
I think it would be a beautiful thing to do. I mean, I was reflecting on all this and how we go through, you know, from moments of bliss to moments of hell. Mm. Like, you know, Victoria Woody Allen also said that going through a colonoscopy is paradise, prep is hell, you know, we go like that. And how all of this seems so wonderful when we are contained here. And then when we go outside to our lives, it's just like, you know, what's all this about? It seems like the world is still spinning on a free wheel, and we don't know how to go through that, you know. So every reflection, everything that you share is valuable. So if you can do that, Mike, I would appreciate that. I think we would all appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, try and do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. You're just giving so much, so many of us hope. It's so beautiful. Oh, I wanted to see beautiful people are writing you in the chat. So I want to end with this poem. by Rilke. It's Rilke wrote actually in German language, but this one is translated, been translated by Joanna Macy and Anita Barron. It's a beautiful, beautiful book that came out not long ago, The Book of Hours, that's his book, and their translation are fabulous. So I'll read that. God speaks to each of us as he makes us, then walks with us silently out of the night. These are the words we dimly hear. You, sent out beyond your recall, go to the limits of your longing, embody me. Flare up like a flame and make big shadows I can move in. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its seriousness. Give me your hand. Let everything happen to you, friends, and may it be just another movement towards our birthright to be fully, fully happy, fully liberated, heart and mind. And I want to give thanks and bless and share merit. May the momentum of our meeting, of our meditation together, of our time shared together, may this momentum serve to the benefit of us and of all living beings. May it be so. Thank you, friends, for this evening. Much, much love, much metta.